Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
Hello and welcome to Absent Minded. My name is Jared Book, and we have a trade to announce. Well, actually not announce. By the time you're listening to this, you already know about the trade, but we're going to talk about it. Joining me today is Matt Drake. Matt, how are you?
I'm terrific. You know, it's always a good day when the Habs are taking the right steps in the rebuild.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's not much to complain about when it comes to the trade they made. Before we get started, though, the Super Bowls are right around the corner, and Bet Online is your number one source for football odds, stats, trends, and lines. With everything from point spreads to hundreds of player performance props, head to Bet Online today to stay updated on all the action. Bet Online, the game starts here. And where the podcast is going to start is the trade of Sean Monahan. This was originally supposed to be a Player of the Month podcast. And it kind of works out well because our NHL Player of the Month was Sean Monahan, and he was traded on Friday to the Winnipeg Jets for a 2024 first round pick and a conditional third round pick in 2027, which is basically in case the pick that the Canadians get is 32nd overall. It's basically insurance for that. First impressions on the trade, Matt.
I mean, you can't evaluate this trade without considering first the fact that Kent Hughes conjured all of this out of absolutely nothing, right? He got a first round pick just for being willing to take Sean Monahan off the Flames' hands. So really, when you look at this, is Kent Hughes basically out of nowhere just acquired two first round draft picks for the Montreal Canadiens. So it's brilliant business. I think a lot of people were hoping for a little bit more out of Monahan, but let's be honest, we were all, I think, a tad greedy thinking that we were going to get, like, you know, a blue chip prospect plus a first. It would have been great. And you know, at that point you're maybe even getting into build a statue for Kent Hughes territory, but it was probably never really on the table. So I think when we look at this, and when you look at it with the greater context of how long this took and how much time Kent Hughes invested into just conjuring up two draft picks like that, I think you have to look at this as an absolutely brilliant piece of business for the rebuild. This is two draft picks that they absolutely did not have before, and they got all of this for the cost of absolutely nothing. In fact, really what they paid was we just got to watch Sean Monahan play some pretty good hockey for about a season. About a full season. Problems last year. So really, the Habs are just straight up winners. There's no possible way that you can say that they lost this.
Yeah, I mean, all it cost was like, what, $7, $8 million of Jeff Molson's money? like that's literally all it cost.
Yeah.
To basically buy two first-round picks. And what's interesting is that, you know, people are all like, oh, that's not a big return. We're literally like a week or so away from people laughing when people are saying that Sean Monahan would get a first round pick. It feels like the Ben Chiarot trade all over again, right? Where people are like, yeah, okay, you'll get a first round pick for Ben Chiarot, sure. And then sure enough, they did get a first round pick for Ben Chiarot. That's pretty much what happened here. And it's really easy to see how Kent Hughes works, is that he has a price for his players. And until somebody meets that price, he holds on. And then eventually somebody will meet that price and we get a trade. It was the exact same thing that happened with Ben Chiarot. It's the exact same thing that happened with Brett Kulak, Arturi Lehkonen. basically every trade that he's made where he is trading a player is he's waiting for what he wants, and then when somebody offers it, that's the difference. And could he have held out for a little bit more near the end of the trade deadline? Sure. Is there a chance that Sean Monahan would have gotten hurt before then? Yes. So you take the first round pick and you run, and you don't really compare it to what Vancouver gave up for Elias Lindholm, because it's a different situation, right? I mean, I don't think anybody thought that Sean Monahan was going to get this. I mean, look, this is a player that Calgary had to pay a first round pick just to get off their roster a year ago or a year and a half ago, I guess. And yes, there's a salary cap and a salary issue that obviously is no longer an issue because he re-signs as a free agent. I mean, there's a chance that he re-signs as a free agent with the Canadiens next year and slots right back in as the number three center. Obviously, there's a chance that Christian Dvorak might get traded at with 1 year left on his contract. They're hoping Kirby Dach will probably be healthy again, and who knows what else they add between now and next season. But there's a chance that if they need a third center with the NHL experience, that Sean Monahan comes back again. I mean, he, by all intents and purposes, he liked his time in Montreal. The team and the coaches and the players all love Sean Monahan, and that's a big reason why he re-signed with the 1 year contract he did this year. But I think when you look at it, it's could you have expected a little bit more? Maybe, but I think that that's just people who got excited when they saw the trade was coming and were looking at everybody on the Winnipeg Jets once they were the team that was circled. But I mean, if you would have said 2 weeks ago to people, yeah, you're going to get a first round pick for Sean Monahan, most people would have been like, yep, taking that to the bank. And we have to consider also that there's a chance that Winnipeg goes on a run here, but there's also a chance that they lose in the first couple rounds, and that pick ends up being in the early 20s as opposed to late 20s or in the 30s as well. So I mean, there's still a lot of questions. Like, Sean Monahan's going to be their number two center until Scheifele gets back, and I don't think he was Montreal's number two center, and Montreal's not a playoff team. So obviously it filled a need for the Jets as well, but I mean, it's not like the that first rounder is going to be 31st or 30th. I mean, it might be. Nobody thought Florida's first was going to be that low until they went on a run last year. But at the same time, I don't think that makes too much of a difference. And to be completely honest, I would be very surprised if Montreal ends up being the one picking with this pick.
Yeah, he's.
I think it's another tool in Kent Hughes's chest. They now have four first round picks over the next 2 years, and I think that they're trying to get older players, not older, but in that 23, 24 age range, and somebody that can build into this core. So yeah, I would be surprised they even end up making this pick, but at the same time, there's a lot of interesting things you can do with a late first round pick.
Yeah, and he's shown in the past that obviously he's willing to deal some of those picks in order to pick up, slightly more developed players that he thinks can slot into his lineup faster, that he thinks are going to be able to help the team faster or maybe more consistently than whoever they would have picked with those picks. Now, I don't think there's a guarantee that he's going to trade those picks, but the Habs have been and are apparently going to continue to be linked to the possibility of the Ducks trading Trevor Zegras. Of course, him and Cole Caufield are boys. They've been friends for a long time, and I think a lot of people would like to see them reunite in Montreal, get a little bit more dynamic up front for the Habs. I mean, it's not necessarily going to be Zegras, but I don't think that Kent Hughes will shy away from making a trade with that pick. The third that they got back, like you said, that's just insurance for in case it happens to be 32nd, because the condition, I don't know if we mentioned that yet, on that third round pick in 2027 is that they only get it if the Jets win the Cup. So I really don't think that Sean Monahan makes the Jets a cup contender. I didn't really see them as cup contenders prior to this trade either. So unless they've got some other tricks up their sleeves, I think they probably are what they are, and they stand a good chance of being out in the first couple of rounds and getting the Habs a pretty decent chip that they can either use to pick a player or they can package up and try to improve the team another way by making a trade. So again, I think it's brilliant business for the Habs. I think this is maybe some of the best asset management that I've seen from a general manager in a long time in Montreal. We've seen some pretty poor asset management in the last 20 years or so, maybe the last 30 years, really. And it's kind of refreshing to see them be so efficient with their asset management for once. So my hat's off to Kent Hughes on this one. I'm happy about it. It does kind of suck to lose Monahan moving forward because, you know, as you mentioned, he was our player of the month for the Habs. He's been, over the last month, their best player. Everybody that they've put on his line has had success. Joshua Roy came up and had his first stint in the NHL and looked great on a line with him and Yoel Armia. Yoel Armia himself had been pretty brutal at the start of this season to the point where he was even sent down to the AHL, and he's been looking great on a line with Sean Monahan. So he's a player that's been elevating some other pieces on the roster. Especially as of late, and now all of a sudden they don't have that. So what are they going to do at center, right? You know, Christian Dvorak not available right now. Alex Newhook, they're hoping comes back soon, but I think he's more of a winger, and they're going to kind of be forced to put him at center. It does leave a bit of a hole in the lineup, but some people have pointed out on Twitter as well, that's not necessarily a bad thing. If you're on Team Tank, you might love this because you're going, all right, well, the team just got weaker. We're going to lose more games. We're going to improve the pick that we already got. And then we can just sit here and cheer for Winnipeg to lose as many games as possible from here on out to see if it can improve that pick as well. So there's a lot to like about this. And yeah, it's unfortunate to lose one of the best players that they've had in the last little while, but it's for the betterment of the rebuild. And we should be pretty happy with this. Like you said, like, I think all of us were guilty of going to the Elite Prospects page and seeing the Jets prospect. I know I did it, and I went, ooh, Colby Barlow, ooh, Shabrikov, ooh, hoo-hoo, Rutger McGroarty. But they were never, like, let's be honest, that was never going to happen. Like you said, Calgary had to pay a first just to get this guy off the roster, regardless of the fact that his salary is way lower now than it was then. It's still, you know, it's still going to be tough for you to really get a king's ransom for a player like that. I think you're right. Kent Hughes had his price. Somebody met it, and he said, I'm not going to wait around and find out if he gets hurt, because that's been a problem with Monahan the last couple of years of his career, where injuries, they pop up. I was honestly surprised that the condition on either of the picks didn't end up being he has to play X amount of games.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's always a danger where it's like, yeah, he has to play like, 50% of the playoff games that the Jets play, or things like that. You see that a lot. You see that more often, I think, with football. I think that's, with snaps and stuff like that. But yeah, it's definitely not out of the realm of possibility that it was like, we'll give you a second rounder, but it becomes a first if he stays healthy. And I think it's a win that it's an unconditional first, in this case as well. So yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's basically somebody they got for free with a first round pick, and they're getting an additional first round pick. Like, we're coming from, the Mark Bergevin era where I don't think he added a first round pick. Like, very rarely did he add a first round pick at any point in his tenure. And here's Kent Hughes with basically one player, and Sean Monahan gets two in the span of like a year and a half. So obviously it seems like the Canadians are like, they're rebuilding on the ice, and they're building an organization, but they're also a lot more creative than they have been in the past under Marc Bergevin. And I think that that's, just really good management. Even, there's been some other issues. I mean, retaining salary on Jeff Petrie, and all they have basically to show for it right now is Tanner Pearson and a second round pick, which, a second round pick is still something, considering they got Petrie in the first place by trading Mike Hoffman, and not retaining salary. So I mean, it's a lot. There's a lot of rabbit holes you can go down here. But at the end of the day, I think Kent Hughes is well ahead of where he of average, right? It hasn't been necessarily perfect, but he's well ahead of average. And even some of the question marks that he had surrounding the decisions he's made, And you know, obviously, Yaroslav Slavkovsky is the big shiny one on that front. He's turned around a lot as well lately, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. And you mentioned Zegras before. I'll go on the record and say that I don't think there's a player available right now that fits what the Montreal Canadiens need more than Trevor Zegras. Do I think he's necessarily a number one center, surefire number one center? No, but I think if you pair him with Nick Suzuki and Kirby Doc down the middle, that's definitely a good enough trio down the middle to win a Stanley Cup. And you know,
That's
this
a spine of a lineup that should be able to hurt you, like would no matter what lines
and
out there.
the big issue with this team, right? They don't have a top end forward. Trevor Zegras is all offense, right? Like that's his calling card. Like you're not gonna put him like a Nick Suzuki role. And have him defend top lines. Like his job is there to score. And I think that, yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're going to use this pick or what the asking price is. I'm not speculating on that. I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen. I just think if you add the things up down the table, he's definitely somebody that makes sense for this organization where they are. And they're starting to collect the assets that they have to trade for him, as well. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Again, it wouldn't surprise me if they make the pick, but it also wouldn't surprise me if they don't make the pick come June in Vegas. So it'll be fun to watch. And you know, honorable mention of the month for January. I mean, Cole Caulfield had, you know, he finally remembered how to score. Or not remembered how to score, but he finally started to score. And you see how it comes with bunches with him. And that's a good thing going forward. Obviously, there's going to be issues. You know, it's going to be hard to judge this team going forward when they might not have four NHL centers on any given night. But at the same time, it you know that you want to see your guys perform, and between Suzuki and Slavkovsky and Caulfield, the young D defense that they have, there's going to be things to look forward to as well. And a new hook coming back. You know, yes, he wasn't ideal as a center, and long term he might not be a center, but I thought he was fine as a center to start the year. Obviously, I think you know he had Doc on his wing a little bit as well. And then when Doc got hurt, he became a center, and you know he kind of struggled a little bit. But I think also it was at a point where a lot of the team was struggling as well around him. You know, Slavkovsky wasn't playing his best. Josh Anderson, who was there for a bit, wasn't playing his best, and they kind of struggled to find the right combinations. So I'm curious to see how Alex Newhook at center fits into this, you know, new Canadiens team, because I think that, you know, Yuraj Slavkovsky playing the way he's playing, and you saw it when he was playing on the top line, you saw it when he was playing with Sean Monahan, that's who he is now. And I think that's a big change for whoever takes that number two center role. If Slavkovsky doesn't play on the top line, he's proven that he can, you know, elevate another line that he's on as well. So that'll be interesting.
I think the best thing that they can do for Caulfield is go back to the configuration that kind of started him, that opened the floodgates a little bit for him, which is put him back on the top line with Nick Suzuki and Juraj Slafkovský. Now that Monahan's gone, I mean they did throw Slafkovský down on the second line there with Monahan and Armia for a bit, and let's be honest, they looked very good. I had no issues with that line. It was again Monahan was doing a really good job of elevating almost anybody that he played with. Now he's gone, and Cole Caulfield, I think one of the important things is to not lose any momentum on his development as a player. We gotta it's easy to forget this guy is still what? I mean, has he even played two full seasons worth of games yet? I don't think so.
No, he's barely played
I'd have
one
to double
full
check
season
that, but
games.
yeah, he hasn't even played two full seasons, but so he's basically still a rookie at this point. And I know that's not actually the case, and you can't necessarily look at it that way, but you should look at how many games has he actually played in the NHL and go, okay, well, we need to figure out ways that we can continue this kid's development. And I think the best thing for him on that front is to put him back with that configuration in the lineup. Yeah, it's going to look rough some nights because you're going to have one line doing a lot of the heavy lifting and the other lines are going to be basically treading water. And there's not a whole lot that you can do about that. But I think, you know, paramount for this team is not to lose any of the development that they've made with some of these players. And that way they can allow, of course, them to continue to have success once the rest of the lineup is healthy and once they've made the other additions that they're going to be making through the draft or through any future trades. So I would advocate pretty heavily for that. Cole Caulfield's been playing some really good hockey, and I think the way that Juraj Slafkovský goes in on the forecheck and everything opens up a lot of opportunities for him. And we're seeing him score in new ways as well. Like, he's taking it to the front of the net. He's getting in there and getting in on some rebounds. If anybody, like, and Juraj Slafkovský, the way that he creates space out there with his forechecking, it's opening up so many opportunities for Cole Caulfield. And we're seeing new wrinkles in his game as a result. So really good hockey from him in the last month. And I think the only way to keep that rolling is to go back to that line configuration.
Yeah, just to circle back, 88 games career for Juraj Slafkovský in the NHL.
So just over a season.
Yeah, he's in his like first week of his second season, basically, when it comes to that. And yeah, there's gonna be growing pains, obviously, and you know it reminds me a little bit of when they traded Tyler Toffoli, right? Like there was no need to do that when they did it, but the flip side to that is that they ended up finishing last and winning the lottery. So, you trade someone like Monahan, you get a first round pick, but you could also, maybe improve your odds in the lottery as well a little bit. And maybe move up a couple of spots, in the rankings as well, which obviously limits how far you can drop. And, you know, there's a lot of factors when it comes to that. It's not the end all be all. But, you know, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. If you're not going to make the playoffs, you might as well finish as low as you possibly can. As long as players are still developing properly, right? Like you don't want to become like the team that never wins and is losing 6-0 every night. And, you know, there's enough core pieces on the NHL roster that they should be winning some games. Right, like it shouldn't be like tear it completely down, but yeah, you know, I think everyone knows what I mean, what we mean when we say, you know, falling a couple of spots in the draft, in the standings doesn't really hurt.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
And to that point, the Laval Rocket are winning, or they were winning, and now they're struggling a little bit. We'll go quickly through our other players of the month as well. And the AHL player of the month was Logan Mailloux, and honorable mention to Arber Jacki. And they kind of go hand in hand because Mailloux's play really improved once Arber went down to Laval. And since Arber has come back to the NHL, the Rocket haven't won a game. It's not all on him, but he definitely helped that team, right? When he first was sent down, that team was in the middle of a long losing streak. And when he was called up, they were 9-0-1 in their last 10 games. So he definitely helped, and there's a lot of factors into that. Jakub Dobiš also started playing well, but I think it helps an AHL team to have somebody like Arber Jacki in the AHL, and he helped Mailloux's game. They were the top pairing by far on that team, and I think that you saw Mailloux's game step up a little bit, and everybody, you know, played a little bit better when Jacki was there. And it's kind of funny because, you know, he got called up, and I don't think the Canadiens won a game after he was called up either. So but you know, that's really the— it's good to see Laval playing well, and Mailloux has been better than I thought he would be all season. He's the AHL, he's the Rocket representative at the All-Star game, and had a great month.
Well, I think you're seeing a lot of the same development that he had in his junior career as well. We all know his junior career was pretty significantly shortened. by suspension and by injury. And the result was he missed out on a lot of development years. But what I saw from him last year was beginning of the year, he was making some pretty glaring defensive issues. I think it was the same thing at the beginning of the AHL season, some pretty glaring defensive issues. But what I've seen from him lately, and I haven't watched as many Rocket games as yourself or Scott Matla, for instance, but what I've seen from him in the games that I have watched is I'm seeing less of those than I saw at the beginning of the year when I watched him. And it's very much mirroring what I saw from him last year in London, where as he gets more comfortable, he makes less of those errors. And he's never going to be, you know, David Savard, block a bunch of shots and play a shutdown role, right? And it would be a tragic mistake to try and turn him into that type of player. Right, his skills are offensive. He's an extremely good skater, and he has a shot from hell. And those are the things that got him to the AHL All-Star game. Those are the things that are going to get him to the NHL if he gets there. And those are the things that are going to allow him to have success in the NHL if and when he gets there. So this season, I've said this many times, it's got to be all about for JF Will and everybody in the Rocket is figuring out ways to mitigate his defensive lapses enough to allow him to have success offensively. And I think he's playing what in his last 12 or 13 game point per game pace, right? So you're seeing precisely that, is that he's doing well enough to allow his, you know, his elite tools to actually shine through. Is he going to be an elite defenseman in the NHL? That's going to depend. But those tools that he has, they have to be nurtured. They have to figure out a way for that to continue to work for him. And they have to figure out ways for it to work better for him in order for him to have any success at the NHL level. And it's good to see that he's, you know, kind of coming along in the AHL. I think a lot of people were concerned about, you know, given the short amount of time that he actually played in junior, what's he going to look like when he comes up against pro opposition? The good news is that he is learning game by game, and he's getting better. And I think that's fantastic. It adds yet another defenseman to the Habs. They seem to have too many defensemen. They probably need to start looking at packaging some of those guys. You know, we talked about Trevor Zegras. I would be shocked if they make a trade anything like Trevor Zegras, or even if it's him or somebody else, if it doesn't involve at least one young defenseman.
Yeah, no, exactly. They definitely have the assets, whether it's, you know, a bunch of wingers, a bunch of defenders, a bunch of picks. They have the pieces to make a push. And Kent Hughes has hinted as that, right? Like, he's like, you know, listen, you don't have to draft superstars all the time. You can make trades. You can get them in free agency. You can pick up other guys. And he's kind of hinted at that. And I think, that, you know, you've seen it with Kirby Dach. Like, that was kind of a guy that came out of, you know, they turned Alexander Romanov into Kirby Dach. And I think that that's something that you might be able to do, not all the time, but they have enough assets to make another go at it. And it'll be interesting to see. And yeah, with Mayu, what you don't see very many, like, WTF moments where you're just like, what is he doing out there? And I think that that's raised his floor considerably in my eyes. Is that, you know, I was expecting him to be lost a couple of times in coverage, and at the beginning he kind of was, but not as often as I feared he would be. And he's just getting better. So yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely an NHL player there. I don't think it's necessarily going to be, you know, like a number one, surefire number one defender, but, you know, surrounded by some of the guys he's going to be surrounded by, he doesn't really need to be, right? There's a lot of guys, and even on that right side, they have Reinbacher and a couple guys who can move over to the right side. Like, he's not going to be the guy to be the guy to have to do everything himself. There's going to be a committee of defenders that are going to kind of help him out when he gets to the NHL. And I think
Shelter him a bit.
Yeah,
Shelter him a bit. You let him get power play minutes. Like,
right. Yeah.
If they did a hardest shot competition for the entire organization, I would sell my house and put all my money on him having the hardest shot.
Yeah. I mean, there's not really many people. I don't know if there's any competition that, I mean, you know, Cole Caulfield has a good release, but I you know, his slap shots,
velocity.
Yeah, exactly. It's and also, you know, smaller player as well. Less power to get in there, but yeah, you know, that's something that we haven't really seen that too much in the AHL. Like, there's been some times where he's let it go, but he seems to be more deferential. And you see that a lot with young players. You know, I was we're talking about the women's hockey player of the month in a bit, but Maureen Murphy is playing with Marie-Philippe Poulin. And she's like, the first couple of weeks I was playing with her, all I wanted to do was get her to puck. And I think that that's something that young players default to when they're playing with, players who have more experience. And obviously the Rocket don't have a Marifoot plan. They do have a good sniper from Bose, but not Marifoot plan. And I think that, that's something that young players have to adjust to. And you don't want to be the guy who's shooting. And look, there's some stories that JF Hull himself has said about Mayu where, he showed up late a couple of times and the guys kind of got on him. They tied his skates and, did some stuff to kind of be like, hey, you need to be more mature. And I think that you don't want to be the guy who is comes into that environment, was immature, and then you're shooting every single chance you get. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to be that guy to be like, oh, there we go, shooting again. So I think that there's some of that like maturity that's he's like, no, I'm gonna defer to my teammates. I'm gonna look for the best play. And I think that as he gets more experience and more confidence, that's something that we'll see more often because I definitely think that there's the shot is not really something we see. He's just been starting to get power play time as well on a top unit, so it's not something that he's it's not like he's been there all year either. So but yeah, I think that he's a great month. Yeah, deserves the All-Star recognition as one of the top scoring D in the AHL and rookie D. Well, I guess defense overall, but also rookie. I think he's third in rookie defender scoring as well. So, good month for him, and interested to see how he'll do in the playoff push for the Rocket as well. And European prospect of the month is someone who we haven't really talked about that much over this year is Filip Eriksson, and he's really reached a new level of offensive play since he's moved to the Allsvenskan, which for those who aren't familiar with the Swedish setup, it's a men's league, but just basically the AHL of the Swedish league. So it's not a junior league. He's playing in a men's league. Obviously, there's other players like him who are under 20, but it's not a junior league, and it's just basically the level right below the SHL. And he's been putting up points. I think since he's been in the Allsvenskan, he hasn't gone a game without scoring a point. So it's a good month for him, and he's kind of that one of those sneaky guys in the organization. Like there's so many of them that you look at and be like, oh, he can become an NHL player, and there's so many of those guys. We talk about it when you talk 25 under 25, and he's somebody who can really, maybe surprise people as he develops. He's still only 19 years old, in his draft plus 1 year, so he's still a young player. Was eligible for the World Junior team this past year. Wasn't named to the roster, but was eligible, and so it'll be fun to watch him as well.
Yeah, Pat mentioned his production right now is up there with some of the top prospects from the last two drafts. I mean, I can't personally claim to have seen him yet, but the you get production like that, it's going to make people pay attention, and maybe another guy that you just don't want to be sleeping on. I mean, it's entirely possible that he ends up being a key player. And again, we can still bring up the trade aspect, right? Some of these prospects, if they're producing well, whether it's overseas or in a junior league here or in AHL or anything, it could, if they don't become possible options for the Montreal Canadiens, we can't discount the fact that Kent Hughes might use them to try and get somebody who's going to be an option for the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, it's always better when your prospects play well than when they don't, right? I mean, you saw it in the trade, you saw it in the trade with Vancouver and Calgary, right? One of the prospects that Vancouver traded was Hunter Brashevitz, who is the leading scoring D in the OHL, right? Like the if your prospects start producing, they have value too, right? And if you're trying to trade, maybe younger prospects for older players, or not older players as in the 30s, but like if you're trying to trade for a new hook or a Doc or someone like that, having a bunch of prospects that interest scouts and interest GMs is never a bad thing. And speaking of the North American prospect of the month, was Lane Hutson. And I mean, Not much you can say that hasn't already been said about Lane Hudson. Obviously, January, he started the year. The World Juniors was named. I think he was named to the tournament All-Star team at the World Juniors. Played, I think, 3 minutes more than any other U.S. player on average per game. Didn't put up the scoring numbers that many people expected him to, but definitely was the leader on that defense, and goes back to Boston University and does the same thing there. And is just doing his thing, playing out his season until he's expected to sign at the end of the year. And there's not much to say about Lane Hudson that hasn't already been said. And he's really good, folks, and he keeps scoring. But no, it's like I said, before, it's good to see players produce. And obviously he's nearing very likely he'll be signed when his season ends. Whether it's in time to play games or not, that remains to be seen. But because Boston University is a really good team with Mack and Celebrini as well. So, but it's always good to see your players performing well.
Yeah, and you know the whole disappointment over his World Junior production, I think it was a little odd to me. He had 6 points in what, seven games? Like, that's not bad production. One of the guys who he has the most similarities to in the NHL right now is Quinn Hughes. The best that Quinn Hughes ever did at the World Juniors was 3 points in seven games. Now, I'm not trying to dump on Quinn Hughes. I'm just trying to illustrate the point that sometimes defensemen at that tournament do not blow the doors off offensively. And that doesn't mean that they're not going to have success at the next level. You need to look at the production that they're doing in their league play, which for Lane Hudson is absolutely beyond elite from the point. I mean, he's playing on a very good team and that definitely helps him, but his NCAA production is elite. It's like one of one. There's very, very, very few guys who can come close to what he's even doing right now in the NCAA. So you got to consider that. I really do think, because people have asked me, like, what's the best comparable for him in the NHL level? And I think that the best comparable is, in fact, Quinn Hughes. And that may be a ceiling. People might look at that as a ceiling. But I think that, you know, it's quickly becoming a straight up realistic projection and not a ceiling that he could maybe hope to get to. I really think that that's the type of player that he could be for the Montreal Canadiens. Everybody's excited about him, and with very good reason. This is a fantastic player, and the fact that they got this guy outside of the first round is, kind of mind blowing. It just goes to show how some of these teams they undervalue people because of their size or lack thereof, and you end up getting them for cheap. Lane Hudson, what a season. And I think anybody who's worried about his World Junior production, just take a look at some of the best defensemen that have come through the American program and see what they did at that tournament and tell me if that had an impact on their eventual NHL future.
Yeah, I mean, when we say disappointing, it's because he's so good, right? Like that's the only reason why it was disappointing. He made the tournament All-Star team. Like you said, almost a point a game. He had 3 minutes more than any other US player per game. Like he was their best. He was their most leaned on defender, the team that ended up, winning the gold medal. And the only reason that we see that as disappointing is because he's raised the bar so much. Like it's not disappointing on for any other context except that it's Lane Hudson. And I don't even think it was disappointing. I just think that people expected him to, be in that like 2 points per game range, because he's proven that he can be that good, right? And I think that he was asked to do a little bit more defensively, which I think is almost more impressive when you look at his future outlook, right? Like if he can raise that bar defensively and still bring what he brings in transition, I mean, the sky is the limit when it comes to him. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how he transitions. But everything he's shown is that he's going to be a solid NHL player in my eyes. I don't think there's any doubt that, I'm not going to say he's going to be a superstar or an elite player, but I think he's going to be a very good NHL defender going forward. And yeah, I do want to point out the honorable mentions. Rhett Pitlick had 13 points in his last 8 games. A little bit older, the clock is ticking on him and his eligibility. But Owen Beck, after another player who was at the World Juniors, maybe had a disappointing tournament. I think he only had 1 point in the tournament. But the fact that, after he was getting after he was traded to Saginaw, he's been putting up points like nobody's business. I think he had what, 6 points in his first game in
Yeah, he
Saginaw.
put up
And
six in his first game.
yeah, I
Nuts.
mean, just he's gonna go to another Memorial Cup. He's gonna show what he can do, and just a good showing for him. And yeah, worth pointing out. Again, read the article. You'll see all of the honorable mentions and all the numbers that we're not going into necessarily at HabsEyesOnThePrize.com. But worth mentioning on the podcast because I mean, anytime you get traded to a team, you get 6 points in your first game. It's worth mentioning.
Yeah.
And for the first time this season, we have a PWHL Player of the Month, and it won't shock anybody to know that it's Marie-Philippe Poulin. She leads the PWHL in goals with six. She has an assist as well, tied for team lead in scoring. If you haven't seen her tying goal against Toronto with 16 seconds left, I highly recommend you look it up, whether it's on YouTube or whether it's on Twitter or whether it's in the article. The video's on the article as well. Definitely recommend you watch that because it's one of the nicest goals I've ever seen. But what else is there to say about what she can do? But Montreal's goaltending has been really solid. They're tied for first in the league with Minnesota, and Anne-Renee Desbiens was 3-1-1 with one shootout loss, 2.11 goals against average, 930 save percentage. And you know what? Those numbers aren't even number one on her team because Elaine Chooley was 2-0 in two starts. She had a 1.5 goals against average and a 962 save percentage. Montreal's goaltending, maybe they've been relying on it a little bit too much. They've given up 40 shots in their last three games, which is not ideal. But hey, when you have goaltending performances like that, you can't go wrong. And the last person I want to mention is Maureen Murphy. I mentioned her a little bit before off the top. She's a rookie. She played last year in the NCAA at Northeastern. She was playing on the line with Chloe Aurore and Alina Mueller, two of the top young players in women's hockey, and she's kind of been under the radar a little bit because she was playing with them. She doesn't have the international accolades that those two have, but she has six assists and one goal in this season. Playing on the line with Poulin, she scored the overtime winner in her last game, and she was also named to Team USA for the rivalry series, the games coming up next week as well. So she's really developed into a player to watch. She has a 3-year contract in Montreal, and it's going to be fun to watch her develop. And she gets the senior national team debut that she'll have with the rivalry series coming up next week as the U.S. has a 3-1 lead in the series. There's three more games to go. They play all seven games, even if one team gets to four early. But last year, Canada came back from a 0-3 deficit. This year, they also had a 0-3 deficit and won the last game. So Team USA is probably going to try and stop that from happening. But yeah, it's great to have PWHL hockey back, or to have it at all. Great to have pro women's hockey back at a top level in Montreal with Poulin and Desbiens and so many other players around the league. And it's been getting a lot more attention than I thought it was going to get. The attendance has been great and just keeps on growing. Place Bell is pretty much sold out for the February 18th game. The game on February 16th between Montreal and Toronto, and Toronto is sold out at Scotiabank Arena, which is over 18,000 people. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. If you haven't checked it out yet, the games are on TV. They're all on YouTube if you're not in Canada as well. And just a lot of fun to have that back. We do have a women's hockey podcast as well. Every couple of weeks, we do it as well. So if you haven't seen those episodes, it's me and Zoe Hayden of the Victory Press. So we do have a full women's hockey podcast as well, if that interests you, if you want to know more. So look out for that. We're probably recording probably again this week. I think we're due for that with the bye week coming up as well. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. And yeah, thank you all for listening. It'll be a interesting month for the Canadians coming back from the All-Star break without Sean Monahan, without Brendan Gallagher to start with his suspension. And it'll be We'll have everything that you need, whether it's on Habs and Minded, whether it's at HabsEyesOnThePrize.com. So if you listen to the podcast, check out the website. If you check out the website, check out the podcast as well. We'll have you covered from all angles on that one. This episode has been brought to you by Bet Online, and thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.